And welcome back in hour number three of Morning Drive here on this Wednesday on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Kale, Braden Gall, D. Mason Chase. We are broadcasting live from the Ford Ice Center. Great to have you on this Wednesday, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick joins us coming up at the bottom of the hour. Braden's got the stick out right now. You should see. This is why we need a simulcast of the show, because Braden is actually standing up right now, working on his
puck handling. Yep.
A little skill. I got to tell you, you kind of look somewhat natural.
I'm from Wisconsin.
It's
required that you know how to
play hockey.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about Nashville. What's goofy about the South in general is like when you live in the North, and D-Mace, I don't know if you felt this way. When you live in the North growing up, you get when there's a first big freeze, like you couldn't wait as a 5-year-old to go outside and like knock your buddies around.
Like exactly.
You put on your skates, you go out, the pond freezes over, and you go knock your buddies around. Like, that's, like, the most fun thing in the world. And I lived in Connecticut when I was, like, 5, 6, 7 years old, and that's when I started playing. And you just go out there and you knock your buddies around. It's just a lot of fun. Down here, the first freeze happens, and, like, it's a nuclear war. Like, we're all, like, everyone's stay inside, buy all the eggs and milk, and we're all, you know, we're all in tremendous peril. Up there, it's like, can't wait when you're a 5-year-old to get outside.
I feel like we're doing, like, a remake of the Mighty Ducks movie. Like, this is like a little Gordon Bombay over here.
I don't know. I feel like that's an insult.
You're like the Emilio Estevez of the program.
I could be the coach.
You be the coach?
Yeah.
That is Emilio Estevez.
It is?
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it is. You're right.
Yeah, you're more like you'd be like Charlie Banks.
Okay.
Or no, Charlie Conway.
Listen, the Ducks fly together. That's all I know.
Exactly right.
D4, Gall the way.
Exactly. And speaking of the coach, let's hear from Peter Laviolette, because last night Preds got back on track with another win. They've now won 2 in a row. They beat the Red Wings 3-2. And here is head coach Peter Laviolette talking about a certain line and the team going in the right direction.
I really like their games, the last two games. You got to remember, Phil's missed a lot of time, you know, being out for 10, 11 games with the injury, and then coming back, playing a couple games, then missing 3 more. You can really get out of sync at that point. And, you know, I think the last two games are really good steps in the right direction for that line. I thought Phillip played really well the last two games. So they're generating a lot more strong in the offensive zone. Line that you can count on for 200 feet, but you're really starting to notice them more.
And that is head coach Peter Laviolette last night after the win. And I got to tell you guys, they jumped out to a quick 2-0 lead last night, and really probably one of the best periods. I'll actually go as far, since I've been here in this city for the last 3.5 weeks, that was probably the best period of hockey I've seen them play since I arrived.
I think from a passing standpoint, yeah. I mean, that was as crisp a period of passing the puck as I've seen the Predators have in a long time. It was brilliant, and then, of course, all of that wiped away by a lot of energy and intensity from Detroit in the second period, where they played very, very well. I thought, and Chase and I were talking about this earlier, the fact that they actually held on and got the 2 points in that game. I give a lot of credit to UC Saros for that. Victor Arvidsson came up with the big goal at the end to give him the two-goal lead, even though Detroit comes back and gets another one. Ton of pressure in the final two periods from Detroit. That was one of those, like, all right, show that you're the best team in the Central Division. Win a game where maybe you played perfect early and then they caught up to you late. I thought an excellent performance by UC Saros and Arvidsson with the big goal there. Just defensively, just wasn't there last night. They gave up a lot of high-quality, high-danger chances, and, you know, UC Saros bailed them out. A lot of those points, those 2 points last night probably deserved to go to UC Saros.
And, Derek, I want to get your take on this, because let's look at it from the football side of things. How important is it? Because the Preds have now won 2 in a row. They're playing really good. They seem rejuvenated and re-energized going into a stretch of games coming up that are very important against quality competition. When you were playing, whether it was with the Titans or whether it was with the Ravens, whoever it might be, you start to get on a roll. You win a couple of games, and then all of a sudden you take that momentum into big-time matchups, whether it's Baltimore against Pittsburgh or it's Tennessee against the Colts, whoever it might be. How important is that to be playing your best hockey for this, you know, this example, going up against some of the more elite teams on your schedule?
Well, this is a stretch for the Nashville Predators that, you know, they must be kicking on all cylinders. They have to be in order to not fall behind. It's not like they will fall behind far, but you don't want to give up opportunities where you can get points and then don't get points. I think it started the other night by beating the Senators. They took care of them very quickly. And then they played the Detroit Red Wings last night. And for all intents and purposes, they take care of them with the exception of the last period where UC Soros played, you know, excellent in the net because that last 4 or 5 minutes, I mean, he was getting bombarded with shots, especially the last minute or so. But it's critical for them. I think the Preds hit their lull a week ago when they were playing, you know, they were going to overtime games and they were getting points, but you just saw that it was taxing on them. They were physically tired. Every team, if you play 80-some games or if you play 100-and-some games, even NFL when you only play 16 games, there's a lull that you're going to have as a team. Fatigue sets in no matter what, and I think fatigue set in for the Predators that 4 or 5 games. But the true measure of a team is how quickly do you come out of that? And it seems as if the Predators have come out of that sort of tiredness that they were in. Luckily, they're one of the best, if not the best team in hockey. So maybe they could afford to have a lull for 2 or 3 games, being it is an 80-some game season. But now they've come out of it, and this stretch that they're about to have, they're going to need every guy on ice playing at a high level.
615-737-1025. Let's say good morning to Will, who's up next on Morning Drive. What's going on, Will?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to input on the poll question this morning. I think I definitely have to take the money because I don't think I could use any more good looks.
Oh, attaboy. I like his confidence.
I like the Lululemon shout out. I don't think you guys should be out there rocking spandex. I would vote to wear some sweatpants, maybe a throwback mustard colored Predators jersey. But I also had a question for you this morning. What's the return look like for Mike Fisher? Are we going to see him tomorrow night in Bridgestone?
Highly doubt that. It appears like early March is probably the first. Appreciate the call, Will. That was an excellent call, by the way. I did bring sweatpants just in case. I need to be more flexible in the curling situation than the jeans would allow. And you know, you got to protect yourself in case you fall over because we're all very uncoordinated, minus D-Mace.
I'm uncoordinated on ice.
That might be true. I think Fisher, listen, March 1st, I think, is at Edmonton. That might be just a touch early. They've said as an organization across the board that early March is when they're expecting him back. He's been with the team. He's been practicing with the team. He's been skating with the team. So it's just a matter of when do they pull the trigger. I would say probably late next week, next weekend, maybe, you know, 2 weeks from now is when we're within a 10-day, two-week period of time that he's coming back. And, I don't think he needs any sort of leeway or time to get used to the locker room. Like, he knows all the guys. They all know him. He's going to slide right in. It's not like there's an acclimation period for him getting into that locker room. He's been a part of this team, and they have so much respect for him and vice versa that it won't take any time at all for him to get used to it. It's going to be more about his physical ability. When do his legs stop burning because he's out there playing? So Edmonton's such a fast, big, physical team. Maybe you don't bring him back for Edmonton. Maybe you wait till you play maybe a slower team.
Well, I mean, you can also bring him back first home game in March, and that would be, what, Dallas?
That's a big game. Yeah,
they play Dallas here. But then you kind of run into – you got to be really, really cautious with when you bring him back. Obviously, you have to put him on the roster at a certain date. But when do I insert him into one of the lines? When do I make him a part of the actual team? Because the one thing you don't want to do, and we talk about Fish's leadership, it's there. That's never a question. But one thing you never want to do is mess up a chemistry on ice with the team, especially toward the end of the year. Yes, his leadership would be great in a locker room. Yes, everyone respects him and loves him. But I've said this before. The Predators are playing they're playing their best hockey right now. They have a much better team than they had last year. Do you want to upset or tweak that any way moving toward the playoffs? That's the part that Lavi and everyone else has to figure out. Do we want to bring them in? When do we bring them in? And when we bring them in, how do we bring them in? Because we don't want to as much as we love him, we don't want to upset anything. And I'm pretty sure he's thinking now, like, okay, the guys, how am I going to fit in here? How do I do that?
But I think that's what makes him unique. Like, if you go out and trade for somebody, it's a new body, a new personality, a new thing coming into this locker room that everyone has to get acclimated and get used to. I think the one thing that makes Mike Fisher so unique is that they already played with him. They already know him. I don't think he affects chemistry at all in the locker room because – or on the ice, I mean.
It's not on the ice.
Like, he played with all these guys last year in this position. If they give him a month and a half, that's we're talking 20 games to get ready. I think he's the one – he is such a unique case. I can't remember the last time a guy came out of retirement to play the last, like, 6 weeks of a season. Like, I can't remember that in the NHL.
And that's the part that's going
to
be – that's the part that's going to be interesting because I understand he's been with this team. But when you take him out – now, if he was on ice with PK and Yossi and those guys, okay, that's fine. But he would be on that, what, third line, somewhere around there, maybe the line after that, I don't know. He would be with guys that he hadn't played with. That's the part where you got to kind of figure out, okay, do we insert him with guys he hadn't played with or do we put him in there with guys that he's played with? And kind of upset that chemistry just a little bit. It's not a bad thing. I'm just trying to figure out what's best for the team moving forward.
What was the line that Lavi threw out there game one against Chicago? And we all were like, what is going on? And he had never played before. Like, it was Mike Fisher, and I can't remember who he was with.
Is that when Zolnarchuk was?
Yeah, maybe. Like, Lavi put a line together that had never been put together the entire season, and it totally befuddled Chicago. He put groups together in that. Now, Jofa was together, and they had a great – you know, Arvidsson scored in game one on the shorthand or whatever, and it was great. But the point is that Lavi has shown us that he's willing to put these guys in very new, bizarre, different, unique situations to try to get a jump on the opponent. Fisher's played with a lot of these guys. I think he's such a unique person in this situation. If we're talking about – Rick Nash or any of these other trade chips, we're having all of these concerns that you're talking about, D-Mace. If this is Fisher, I don't have any of these. He's played with Kalle Yarncroke. He hasn't played with Nick Bonino, all right? But he's even played with Scott Hartnell. Like, I don't even have to – I think they overlapped there for 1 year.
So if you bring him back and then you got the young guy that's playing in the Olympics right now, E.T., you bring him – who are you going to remove if you do indeed bring these guys back? Who are you going to then remove?
Zolnarchuk, Fisher, and Watson is the line you're thinking of.
And he would probably play on the fourth line with Austin Watson, with probably Colton Sissons alongside of him on the fourth line. He's played with those guys. Lavi showed us last year, hey, I'm going to do something no one's ever seen before, and we're going to beat Chicago because of it. So that part, I'm not worried about with that part.
615-737-1025 if you want to get in on the Preds conversation. Also, when we come back, I'm very interested to see what Derek Mason has to say. Lamar Jackson, Titans, wide receiver, 25th overall pick. We'll talk to the in-house wide receiver when we come back. Stay there. It is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. .25 The Game is on the road. Make sure to come out to Allen Edmonds Shoes in the Hill Center located in Green Hills from 3 to 5 p.m. this Sunday for a special book signing by football star Nontombu Fentress. That's coming up this Sunday, 3 to 5 p.m. inside of the Hill Center located in Green Hills on Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. We got some breakfast coming our way, Braden Gall. You're very excited.
Ford Ice Center, the greatest place on the planet. I'm just deciding that right now. We're going to go curling. I'm watching people practice hockey and figure skating. We're going to go do some curling. Got some puck handling going on. Ford Ice Center, come out and do some curling. You can bring the family, bring the kids, bring your buddies, have a good time. And they serve beer.
there's the added bonus.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to get Derek's perspective on this. This was Trevor Maddich of ESPN, college football analyst, yesterday. He was on with Jared and the GM. Take a listen to Trevor Maddich on if the Titans were to draft Lamar Jackson.
If the Titans were to draft Lamar Jackson at the back of the first round and turn him into some sort of a slash player where he can run the Wildcat, RPOs out of the Wildcat, they can put him in the backfield in a two running back set and then put him in motion. They can put him in the slot receiver and put him in motion so he doesn't have to worry about getting jammed at the line, stuff like that. You might have a guy that you can get the ball to 12 or 15 times a game, one way or the other, that will completely change the game on any two or three of those plays. And that, to me, is a really intriguing possibility, but it's a risk because it might bust. But if it works, you've got Chris Johnson, except in a much more versatile role.
Derek Mason, your thoughts, Lamar Jackson in this offense?
I mean, it would work. I don't see no reason if LaFleur is who we think he is, it should work. If you do indeed draft him and put him as a slash type of versatile player, because an athlete can play anywhere. You just have to put him in a place where he can succeed, whether it's in the backfield, out wide, running these, you know, RPOs or, you know, jet sweeps, whatever you want to do with Lamar Jackson or any one of his skill set. It should work if you do it right. Him coming here in the first round, I wouldn't draft him in the first round. Maybe in the second, third, somewhere around there. Because that, to me, if I'm going to draft somebody, he has to be position specific, meaning he has to be a wide receiver. He has to be a tight end. He has to be a defense. I can't draft a guy in hopes that, you know, he becomes all things for me. I don't want him. I need a guy that I can count on for the next 10 years that's going to play one position. Not to say Lamar Jackson can't, but I got to draft a guy that I know that has played this position in college, and I believe he would exceed at that position. I can't draft a guy that excelled at quarterback, but then all of a sudden now I want to switch him and make him a wide receiver or a slash running back. You know, it might take him, he might have a, you know, learning curve. Are we in a position where we can afford to have a guy, you know, in a learning curve? No, we're not. So I need to draft a guy that's going to play one position. I could draft him maybe in the second round if he's still there in the third round, but I'm not drafting a guy like Lamar Jackson in the first round. If I draft him, he's going to play quarterback in the first round. That's just me.
Preach. I cannot agree more with Derek Mason. It's if you're drafting Lamar Jackson to be a backup quarterback, fine. Draft him to be a backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. You sure as heck aren't doing that in the first round. I don't know if – I know Trevor Maddich played the game at a very high level, so he knows the difference between a zone read option and a RPO. Marcus Mariota is the guy running the RPOs.
Yeah.
Marcus Mariota is your quarterback. Nick Foles runs RPOs. There's a difference between an RPO and a zone read. Mm-hmm. A zone read is a designed run play for your quarterback. An RPO is, by definition, the quarterback's job is to pull it and throw the football over the top of the linebackers, generally on quick passes. Zach Ertz killed the Patriots on that during the Super Bowl. That is about the quarterback's job. You're not drafting a guy to take Marcus Mariota's job from him. If you're drafting a backup, do it in the fourth round and have him be the backup quarterback. To your point, D-Mace, be the position, whatever yeah. position you are. If you're drafting him as a wide receiver, it also doesn't make any sense to draft him in the first round because we have no idea if he can play the position. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if the Titans need that position with that type of equity. If you want to draft another wideout in the fourth round, fine, go for it. They have much bigger needs on this team. He is a novelty item as a slash player. Mm-hmm. Antoine Rendell was a novelty item. If you want to have a novelty item, you draft that in the seventh round like Julian Edelman, and you move him to wide receiver and you play all over the place. Antoine Rendell was a late second-round pick, and he's one of the best slashers we've ever seen. And even then, dude never had more than 700 yards receiving in a season. You're not drafting a wide receiver in the first round to catch 40 passes a year. He needs to be a product. He needs to be a guy that catches 60, 70, 80 passes a year and is a true wide receiver. Maybe third round, maybe fourth round, you start looking at him at that point if he's available. I don't think he falls that far for you. The question is somebody going to give him a shot to play quarterback? I don't know if he can play quarterback in the NFL.
615-737-1025. Let's say good morning to John, who's in Hendersonville. He's up next on 102.5 The Game. What's up, John?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I was just thinking, Rob Moore is now the Titans' receiving coach, and he played wide receiver for Syracuse, mm-hmm. You know, opposite Marvin Harrison. Now, there's a stud coming out of Syracuse, Steve Ishmael. And I'm just trying to think if the Titans want to keep that Syracuse connection going. I mean, you think Rob Moore might have some influence on that? And let Decker sit and do commercials
with
Decker's, his
wife. Decker's a free agent.
Yeah, Decker's a free agent.
Decker's a free agent. He might not be back on the team.
If you draft another wide receiver in the first round, that's telling me.
Oh, my God.
That's telling me you're not that high. Honestly, I don't care where you draft in the first round. If you draft a guy in the first round, that's telling me you still have some trepidation about whether Corey Davis can be that guy or not. So if he, so I'm gonna draft another guy in the first round just in case, you know.
Well, and it's
he's
not
that guy.
It's you used three of your top four picks last year on pass catchers. You spent almost all of your best draft capital last year on two wide receivers and a tight end.
Somebody better work.
All three of those guys have to be players. Like, you need to see what those guys can give you. If you're drafting a receiver, I agree with you. If you're drafting a receiver in the first round this year or even the second round, what you're sort of saying is we're not really sure about those three guys last year.
Yeah.
Because, you know, listen, you don't need Jonnu Smith to be your starting tight end.
Not yet, no.
But you need a second tight end. You don't need Taylor to be a number one. You need a slot guy that can make can stretch the field a little bit. He's got that ability, but he needs to get smarter about how he plays the game. They drafted all these guys last year. They need to let them develop. They've got other needs, pass rusher, interior offensive line, middle linebacker, safety. You going on and down the list. I don't want to see the Titans investing top high-level draft capital in more pass catchers. They did that the entire draft last year. We still don't know if it worked out or not. We've got to see what those guys can do full season, full healthy, and full offense with the new scheme and the new quarterback sort of all together with Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, if indeed you want to address the wide receiver position, I believe they should go free agency, try to get a young guy in free agency, a guy that, you know, that's going to come in and he has the potential to be a number two, but he can be a solid number three. If you bring in a guy in and he's going to be your number one, that's saying a lot. That's saying you don't believe in Corey Davis. That's why I say you bring a guy in that can be a two, a solid two, a wonderful three, and let Taywan Taylor kind of work off of him and learn from that veteran knowledge that he has along with Matthews. But them drafting a wide receiver, I don't see them. They shouldn't draft a wide receiver.
Isn't that Decker last year? Isn't that what Decker was
last
year?
But Decker was just – I said
you
when
find
they brought,
another one of those guys this year.
I said when they brought Decker and it wasn't going to work. He was just Andre Johnson, not with the numbers, a guy at the tail end of his career, and you're just bringing him in because he's a name. You didn't bring him in because of production because he had none. You brought him in because of a name. It would look good. It didn't work out. You go away from that. Get a guy, a younger guy in his 20s, somewhere around there, mid to late 20s, a guy that played a few seasons in the NFL, a guy that put up some type of numbers. You bring him in, let him play in his offense and see how it goes.
The Predators have won two in a row. Can they make it three straight against the Sharks? Willie Donick, Preds TV play-by-play and co-host of Darren and Donick, will join us next. We're live from the Ford Ice Center right here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we are broadcasting live from the Ford Ice Center here on this Wednesday. Great to have you in. Let's get some hockey discussion going as we welcome in our next guest, Willie Donick, Preds play-by-play on the television side, and of course, co-host of Darren and Donick. Willie, we appreciate a couple of minutes this morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, guys. Good to be with you.
Great to have you, and let's talk a bit about that first period last night. You know, they were able to get pucks in deep early on last night. How impressed were you with the first 20 minutes and how they were able to jump out on the lead and get a nice attack going?
Well, I'll tell you, that was, I thought, one of the best periods they played in a while. Scott Hartnell, who scored one of the goals in that first period, echoed the same thing in our interview during our broadcast in the first intermission. He said that was one of the better periods they played in a few weeks. And it was a good thing that they did because they needed every – one of those minutes to hang on because the Red Wings came back very strong in the last couple of periods.
Yeah, how much credit last night do you give to UC Saros? Not a particularly great night for the defense core. Nothing to be concerned about. They're a great team, and they're going to have some off nights. They gave up a lot of high leverage chances, but UC Saros sort of just was there to save the day the entire step of the way. How much credit do you give him last night?
He's outstanding. I'll tell you what, he is so talented. I keep listening to Chris Mason rave about him and some of the abilities he has to track the puck, process information, and almost know where the play is going to go before it happens. And it's one thing to be able to do that mentally, but then physically to get yourself in the right place as quick as he does, it's a tremendous combination. It served him well last night. He made a lot of key saves, no question. And as you said, Braden, when you play some of these back-to-back games and you're traveling and you get there real late at night, you lose an hour, you're not going to always have a lot of reserve energy. And I think that was the case last night. Detroit had a little more zip, and the Predators were hanging on. UC Saros was the guy that bailed him out.
Now, Willie, even with that being said, in the next, four out of six games or five out of six games, I think it's four out of six games, are at the opponent's arena. They got the next two here at Bridgestone, but then after that they're on a away road swing. Do you feel last night that they got their legs up underneath them the last two games? Because prior to that, it seems like they struggled. It seemed like fatigue had set in, and many thought that this team was kind of on a downslide. But because of that veteran leadership that they have in that locker room, because these guys have been together, because they're such a good team, they kind of picked themselves up out of it. Do you see them now having their legs up underneath them?
Yeah, I think these are the dog days. I think when you get down to it, you know, when you go through this period of time, it's a compressed schedule. Everybody's playing a lot. Sometimes you're playing four games in 6 nights, six games in 9 nights. You really just have to suck it up. And I think that's where depth comes in handy. I think right now, if you have a little patch where you're feeling fatigued, you have to fight through it. And you have to have a lot of different players who can make plays for you. And I thought last night was a good example of that, where Scott Hartnell makes a big play. Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis have come back around offensively and chipped in. The ability for all these defensemen to make big plays and help get on the score sheet for you is going to serve them well. And you're right, they've got a big road trip coming up. They've got two more big games on this homestand now against teams that are likely going to be in the playoffs if they could play again in the postseason. And you're not going to have your A game every night, but you just have to fight through it and continue to look at the big picture.
We're talking to Willie Donick, joining us here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie, we got the trade deadline coming up in just about 4 or 5 days, but you go back to November when they brought in Kyle Turris, and obviously Fisher is going to be coming back in the next couple of games, next couple of weeks. Is it safe to say, is it a fair assumption that maybe the addition of Fisher and obviously Turris back in November is all that they will do before this deadline?
I don't know if it's safe to say. I think they're definitely going to look. Mike Fisher was on the road trip last night, which was really interesting. It was great to see him jump on the plane. The guys were really excited. They were almost clapping for him when he got on there, because this was his first road trip. So he did some training. He's getting closer. We might even see him in a game at the beginning of that road trip next week. Now, as far as the trade deadline, I think they're going to continue to look very closely at everything that's there. They had their entire staff, Paul Fenton, Brian Poyle, were at the game last night along with David Poyle. I think they're talking to anybody and everybody. They're going to explore all options. I would not rule out at all adding another forward before the deadline. It just depends on what the price is. Right now you hear all about all these prices being very high. If those prices come down, I think the Predators will be interested. I don't think they're willing to go out on a limb because, as you said, they have added Fisher. They're going to add Fisher. And they have added tourists. So there's not that much pressure to have to add somebody, which means you don't have to give up too much.
Well, and the interesting thing about bringing in another player, even if you're just nibbling around the edges and it's a third line or fourth line player, there's still a chemistry thing there. The thing about Mike Fisher is there really isn't any concern about where you put him in the lineup, who he plays with, and how long it takes him to get acclimated, right?
Yes, I think Mike Fisher is, number one, beloved by everybody in the locker room. They know him. He also is enough of a team guy to accept whatever role is given him at the beginning. And it could evolve from the time that it starts. I think it's going to be about a 15 to 18 game season for him in the regular season. And who knows what he's going to look like. If he looks good and his body's fresh by the time the postseason starts, he could be a very good weapon for them. He might move up some in the lineup. And as far as anybody they would add, I do think it would specifically be a guy that would elevate their top nine. I don't think they're looking for a small piece. Like, for example, last year they brought in P.A. Parenteau just for depth. They ended up using him quite a bit, but not every game in the playoffs. But he came in handy as a useful guy to put in there. I don't think they're looking for that type of guy. They're looking for a guy that is a clear weapon, but it's got to be the right guy. And if they can't find him for the right place, they'll roll with the guys they've got.
Willie Donick, Preds Television play-by-play and co-host of Darren and Donick right here on 102.5 The Game. Willie, we appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
You got it. There he is, Willie Donick. You can follow him on Twitter at WillieD1025. Okay, so we've got Stick to Sports coming up in just about 5 minutes, but right now, if you want a pair of tickets to see Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders basketball take on conference rival Western Kentucky at the Murphy Center on Thursday, March 1st, Just be callers 4 and 5 right now at 615-737-1025. Once again, caller 4 and 5, 615-737-1025. You get a pair of tickets to see Middle Tennessee State take on their rival Western Kentucky at the Murphy Center on Thursday, March 1st. Callers 4 and 5, 615-737-1025. Nick, Braden, D-Mace, Chase, breakfast is here. We'll stick to sports when we come back. We're live from the Ford Ice Center on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back in the Morning Drive on this Wednesday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Chase McCabe with you. We're broadcasting live from the Ford Ice Center. Time to do a little stick to sports. I'm really looking forward to this one because I feel like Chase McCabe has been, you know, percolating. He's got the questions marinating. He's got his notepad out, his pen. He is ready to go. So, Josh, if you are ready to go back in the studio, what do you say we just stick to sports?
I think you guys are very smart, actually. So if you don't know how this works, still a fairly new show, I will throw out every day at 8:45 five questions for these guys. They have not seen the questions. They have no idea what I'm going to ask. And they each give a very quick answer. So we start things off. Some news surrounding the Tennessee Titans that came out yesterday. Kicker Ryan Succop has signed a five-year, $20 million contract extension. It is the second largest contract for a kicker, second only to the Cowboys' Dan Bailey. Now, I think this is a good signing. You all will probably agree with that. Ryan Succop has been a very big part of this team. My question for you, though, is would you rather be one of the top kickers in the NFL and have that kind of money or a backup quarterback?
I'd rather be a backup quarterback because it seems like they're making just as much money, if not more, than the top kicker. And you know, are you talking, am I getting the number one kicker money or I'm just getting top kicker money?
I mean, Ryan Succop's making $4 million a year. So.
Well, I mean, what the backup for the Titans last year was making $4 million. And so, I mean, I would rather be the backup and not have to worry about anything than the kicker.
The most popular man on every football team is the backup quarterback.
Absolutely.
So, kickers aren't people. no, I'm kidding. Ryan Succop is worthy of the money. I would rather the other thing is the pressure that comes with missing that kick. Like you miss a clutch kick in a big game, like you're a message board joke for decades. If you are the backup quarterback and you get a spot start, you know, whatever, like who cares? Like no one expects you to do anything.
Yeah.
Give me the backup quarterback role. Plus I get to say I'm a quarterback.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have no problem standing around stealing money, doing nothing. So I will 100% be a backup
clipboard
quarterback.
Jesus.
Give me the clipboard, give me the visor or the backwards baseball cap. You know, you want to have me do some hand signals and then pretend like I'm involved. I'm totally fine with that.
Making $5-6 million a year, I take it.
Number two.
You know, Jim Sorgi did have the greatest job in the world for a very, very long time. Let's see how closely you guys were paying attention last night. The Predators took on the Detroit Red Wings. There were two players on the ice for Detroit that have actually been linked to the Predators of possible trades. Gustav Nyquist and Tomas Tatar are two guys that have been mentioned. Now,
I love steak tatar.
I know you do. With the contract situation, Nyquist has a year left after this year, $4.75 million, and Tatar, 3 years left, $5.3 million. So not rental players. These are guys that are still under contract. If I had to give you a choice between the two, what do you think?
Wow. Give me the figures again financially.
Nyquist, 1 year, $4.75 million, and then Tatar, 3 years, $5.3 million. Both the wingers that this team would be looking for.
Which one's faster?
I haven't measured their speed.
Give me the one-year option.
Okay.
Give me the guy, and you know, Tatar scored their, what, second goal last night? Give me the guy with the – because essentially what I'm doing, if I'm taking a guy with the 1 year – it's basically I'm renting a player, but I'm just renting him for an extra year, and I don't know if he's going to sign back or not if he has a great year. Give me the guy with three years left on his contract, because at least I got him locked up for 3 years, and if he turns out to be a good player, as it seems Tatar will be, then at least I got him for 3 years.
Which one cost me the least to get him? That's all I care about.
I think that's the best point.
That's all that I care about. If it's Pontus Aberg for straight
okay,
up,
if both guys cost the same amount to bring in,
then I think it I think speed matters. Which one fits into the system better? Mm-hmm. The contract is an issue that you guys have both brought up. I'm on board with that. But for me, I'll take either one of them if the mm-hmm. cost is the right cost. I don't want to give up a prospect. I don't want to give up certain players off this team that are untouchable. Whichever one costs the least to come in is the one I'll take. Nyquist is a really decent player. So I might lean that way, but I'm with you guys. It's more a salary function and a cost than anything else.
Isn't Nyquist what you take when you're sick and you're trying to go fall asleep at night? Oh, is that Nyquil? That's Nyquil.
Both.
And Deshaun Kizer played a good game last night for the Detroit Red Wings.
Oh, boy. All right. Moving on.
Stick to sports. Number 3.
Bunch of crazy guys here. Back to the NFL. The Tampa Bay Bucks released longtime running back Doug Martin yesterday. Now, I know his best years are probably behind him, but with all this talk of running backs and what the Titans would do, Derek, I'll start with you. Mm-hmm. Would you bring in Doug Martin if you were the Titans?
Nope, too much of injury history. Good back when he wasn't injured, but too much of an injury history. I can't say he has too much tread on the tires because he was injured and he didn't run the ball a lot. So I just wouldn't – if I'm going to get a running back, I got to get a younger – more dependable running back. I can't bring in a guy that is already damaged goods, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't need a muscle hamster. I need a speedy gerbil out of the backfield that can catch a few passes. And at this point, I don't think Doug Martin at 29 years old, and he's had a 1,400-yard season, then he falls off the face of the earth, then he has 1,200 yards, and then he's falling off the face of the earth. I think he only averaged maybe 2.5 yards a carry the last 2 years.
Right.
I think I read that. So
had a suspension.
2.9 last year, 2.9 the year before that.
No
he
good.
He had two 1,400-yard seasons, but otherwise it's 3.6 yards, 3.7 yards, 2.9 yards, 2.9 yards. He's played 16 games in a season one time in the last 5 years.
Can't do that.
His game totals over the last 5 years, 6 games, 11 games, 16 in 2015, 8-8 the last two. That's the amount of games he started. So I just can't. I'm not on board with Doug Martin either. Broken down, older, don't need him. DeMarco Murray, better.
He might be able to do those Kia commercials because they use hamsters for their endorsements, right? So you get the muscle hamster riding in one of those Kias.
He doesn't like
you
that
took
nickname.
Your funny pills today, didn't
he doesn't
you?
Like that nickname,
I like
right?
He doesn't
doesn't he
know.
Hate that nickname?
Are you
I think
are you saying I should just stick to sports?
You could, but
okay.
You're actually
well,
being funny.
That is the same.
You're actually making me laugh.
Number 4.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Louisville this morning and how they're going to have to vacate their championship. Well, a part of that was Rick Pitino, the now former head coach of the Cardinals. He got a tattoo about the championship. You know, so is he going to have to get that removed? My question for you guys, and D-Mace, I know you already have a couple, but is there something that you would get a tattoo for?
Oh, yeah. I've got three, and I will get I'm already working on the final one for this when the second child is born. Mm-hmm. I'll do something with the two kids, but my wife was like, "Why don't you wait until the second one's born, so that you can get something for both of them instead of just something for the first one?" So I'm waiting till April to get something small for that. I don't know if there's a way to guarantee a cup. Would I do it? Would I get a Predators tattoo of some sort to guarantee a cup? I don't know. I think we could get into that conversation.
You know, it's funny. It's my buddy of mine who does afternoons in Philadelphia got Nick Foles tattooed on his back.
Oh, that sounds like a Philadelphia thing to do.
After winning the Super Bowl with the Lombardi Trophy. All right, here's the question. Let me ask you this.
Oh, my goodness.
What would it cost you to get a tattoo on your lower back where fine-looking females get it? What would it cost
they
you?
They are called.
I'm not sure fine is the word
TS,
you want to use.
TS, okay? They're called TS.
They're just a stamp. We'll just call it the stamp.
Yeah, exactly.
TS is a stamp.
This is a family-friendly program, so I didn't want to use the TS. But what would it cost? What's the dollar amount for you to get one, D-Mace?
You better give me like 9 figures, man. 9 or 10 figures.
I'll do it for $1,000.
I knew Brayden would say,
so
just give me $1,000. I'd do it.
If give me like a 4K TV. I'm good.
If I gave you $1 million, would you do it?
$1 million? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need it, but I mean, listen, I would do it. I would do it. I mean,
would yes, you, yes, you would. Listen, I mean, here, Nashville. Yeah, I would. Listen here, Nashville. You're a lot of you driving around right now going, "Oh, I would never do that."
Yeah, I would do it.
Nonsense.
Yeah, I would do it.
99%.
If it's tax free too, I would do it.
99% of the population of this city would get that stamp tattoo for less than $10,000.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm willing to bet you.
Right, I would do it for
Here's the question: For $1 million, do you get Kyle Bowler on your lower back?
Is it his face or is it
his
name?
Is it his face or is his name?
It's gotta be his face.
I couldn't get the name. Hell no.
But the face of another man on your back is really weird.
Yeah, that's
a
weird
really
too,
weird
man.
Tattoo. Like sort of a guy putting Nick Foles on his back.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Okay. What else have we got? Is that it? Or is that
number five?
Right. Oh, we still have one more. We're curling today. That's why we are at the Ford Ice Center. We are going on the ice and curling. Now, you know, when people ask you what is curling, I've heard a lot of people say it's sort of like shuffleboard. You know, that's kind of the comparable thing. So I was thinking about that. Shuffleboard, something that you know, you might play at a bar, have darts.
Or in Florida.
What is your favorite bar game? Braden, I'll start with you.
Like pool's an option, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm a shuffleboard is number one for me. There used to be one at, and I don't know if it's still there, at Red Door Midtown. I used to go there all the time to play that one. That was back when I was younger.
It's one of losers.
And it wasn't really as busy as it is now. But shuffleboard is number one for me. Like they had one at set up at Bridgestone Arena for the Lexus Lounge college basketball viewing party. Mm-hmm. They had a shuffleboard set up there for the NCAA tournament. We played that the entire day. I'm shuffleboard all the way over Golden Tee, over any of that stuff. Give me shuffleboard.
Can cornhole be considered a bar game? They have them at some bars during the summertime.
So. Oh, see, during now you're throwing a whole wrench
in
my
plans. If that's the case, I'm cornhole. I'm playing cornhole.
I might have to change. Can I change?
No.
I didn't think cornhole. I didn't think about cornhole.
You were locked in.
Cornhole is my game.
My family goes on trips, my in-laws, and we have cornhole tournaments. That's all they do for a week.
They had a cornhole tournament downtown last year. Last summer, they had a cornhole tournament.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
It's hard to do indoors, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever played horseshoes or quoits?
Oh, horseshoes. That's how we played in Detroit.
There was a liquor store in Knoxville right where I used to live.
Do they still call them liquor stores?
It was a liquor store. But in the back.
The state store.
Everyone who's ever lived in Knoxville knows all about this. Right off Kingston Pike, there's a liquor store. And in the back, they had a set of horseshoes.
We loved horseshoes.
And I could walk there, which is really dangerous. I could walk there, pick up a bottle of whatever I wanted to when I was of age, of course.
And then play horseshoes.
And get in the back and hang out and play some horseshoes and then walk home on a Thursday. It was great.
All right, there you go.
I love horseshoes.
Yeah, I'll go horseshoes. And that is Stick to Sports. All right, we will actually get back to sports when we come back. Rick Bird, Belmont Basketball, he's going to join us coming up next. We are live from the Ford Ice Center. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Chase McCabe. It's Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.